behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this is Bob Keebler, and today we're discussing portability with Jonathan Blockmacher. Welcome, Jonathan.
Bob, thank you very much for including me in this very interesting matter.
Jonathan, help us out. Let's just spend a minute on the basics. Mechanically, how does portability happen?
Well, as everyone knows, each individual has his or her own estate, gift, and generation skipping exemptions. And if you're married through gift splitting, you and your spouse can share each other's gift and GST exemptions. So if Bob makes a gift, his wife can join in. And even though he's actually the one who made the gift, the law permits her to pretend through a concept known as gift splitting under Section 2513 as though half the gift came from her. However, there was no mechanism in the law for sharing exemptions when one of them died. But now there is kind of a sharing, and it's called portability. Essentially, the law now states for people who've died after 2010 that the unused estate tax exemption of the spouse who dies first basically can be inherited and thereafter used by the surviving spouse for his or her own gift and later estate tax purposes. So that's basically what portability is all about. Let me add, however, and this is important to know, that under current law, portability will go away at the end of next year, at the end of 2012. And that means, under current law to use it, one of the spouses has to die, and the other spouse either has to make a very significant gift after before the end of 2012, or that spouse has to die. Now, there's pending legislation that would extend it and make it permanent, and almost everybody I speak to in Washington, the congressmen and senators I speak to and staff people, are in favor of it because it's kind of like motherhood and apple pie, even though it will cost the federal government some money. But right now, it is temporary only.
So, Jonathan, there's a possibility portability could then go away in 2013, correct?
That is correct, Bob, and I would seriously question whether anyone should construct an estate plan, at least at this time, saying, oh, we're going to use portability, because it sounds so simple. Bob dies and he leaves his whole estate outright to his wife or in a trust, for example. He doesn't have to worry about those complicated provisions about credit shelter or applicable exclusion or anything like that. It's a very simple will. It's the ultimate I love you will. I leave it all to my spouse or I leave it all to a trust from my spouse under the protection of the marital deduction. This assumes, of course, the spouse is a U.S. citizen. If he or she is not, you'd have to use a QDOT, but it would even apply there. And then by filing the estate tax return, the exemption of the first spouse to die, which wasn't used at all or wasn't used in full, would be inherited by the surviving spouse. So the first spouse has to die before the end of 2012, and the second spouse either has to die or make a big gift using that inherited estate tax exemption of the first spouse to die before the end of next year. So, and to count on Congress doing the, quote, right thing, close quote, in legislation is pretty dangerous. I think we've all seen that trying to forecast what Congress is going to do with respect to tax matters is extremely difficult, even if it seems like everybody's in favor of it. And one of the reasons it might not happen, it's going to cost a couple of billion dollars a year. And as Everett Dirksen once observed, a billion here, a billion there, it ultimately adds up to real money. And considering the deficits we have right now and the people who are so against tax increases, it may be that this possibly could fall by the wayside.
So, Jonathan, what about some people are talking about just intentionally using portability, even if portability was here to stay? Let's fast forward 3-4 years. Congress puts this in the law. It looks like it's going to be there forever. Why is it a bad idea to use portability where you can simply use the old-fashioned credit shelter trust?
Well, Bob, there is, to me, virtually no advantage in using portability. And one of the big disadvantages of using portability rather than using your exemption is there's no portability with respect to the GST, the generation skipping exemption of the first spouse to die. So let's assume it's permanent. I say, oh, this is great. I have a simple will, and I leave it all to my wife, and she winds up inheriting my estate tax exemption, but she will not inherit my GST exemption. Now, maybe for people who just don't have much money and they never would have much money and they're going to leave it outright to their kids, even though I could give a lot of reasons why it's always better, and I mean always better, to leave it in trust for children and grandchildren, they decide to pass on that, and that might be a circumstance where you do it. But even there, where you have people not of great wealth, it's possible that their fortunes would change favorably, and you sure wish you'd used it. The one advantage for portability is a second step up in basis of death. So, for example, if I use a credit shelter trust and put my exemption in that, as a general matter, there will be no estate tax inclusion when my spouse later dies and no step up in basis, even though it's out of her estate. Under portability, the assets I've left to my wife, presumably outright, and she's inherited my exemption, when she uses my exemption when she later dies, those assets would be includable in her estate and it'd be a second step up in basis. In addition, if the family thinks it's going to do a very poor job of investing, portability is indexed for inflation, or at least in theory people think it will be. So my wife inherited a $5 million exemption from me. During the balance of her lifetime, it would grow in accordance with inflation. Now, from a realistic perspective, most people who love their descendants are going to want to use their GST exemption, so that's lost. Second is, as a general matter, we have a difference right now, but as a general rule, assets grow faster than inflation if they're well managed, so they'd be more protected if you use the credit shelter trust rather than relying on the indexing of the inflation amount. And third, there are ways, Bob, in which you can simulate a tax-free step-up in basis when the second spouse dies with respect to the property that was exempt from tax when the first spouse dies, through a concept that Diana Zadel, Mitch Gans, and I developed, and which we've actually written up for Steve Weinberg, called the Supercharged Credit Shelter Trust. And it really is a super idea. By the way, J.P. Morgan and Diana Zadel have run numbers comparing portability, assuming it would be made permanent, and using the credit shelter trust. And in virtually all cases, even without the step-up in basis that you can get to the supercharged credit shelter trust when the surviving spouse dies, where you've actually used the exemption. But they've shown that over time, you're much better off based upon very sound assumptions as to growth and expenditures to be using the credit shelter trust as opposed to relying on portability. From my perspective, people will use portability where they just can't stand any complications in the documents, and there will be some lawyers and other advisors who will suggest that that's a very good idea. And also it will be used where someone dies without an effective plan. They die and virtually the entire estate is inherited by the surviving spouse. It's a use basically, I think, when you really look at sophisticated planners, only for people who have not properly planned.
Jonathan, I know there's another anomaly with portability, and that has to do with the SUA. And basically, I think what the issue is, if I die, I leave my entire $5 million to my wife. But then so now my wife has $10 million of exemption. But she remarries, and at her new husband's death, he dies before her, he leaves her his remaining exemption. Let's say that was he had left $4.9 million to his children, and only $100,000 was remaining. Am I right that instead of having a $10 million exemption, that exemption would be cut down to $5 million plus $100,000 of DSUA?
That appears to be the case, Bob. They look at the last spouse you had before you died. So again, Bob dies, his wife inherits his entire $5 million exemption because he left all his assets outright to his wife, qualifying for the marital deduction. She remarries, and that person, for example, only has $100,000 unused. And by the way, you get to use the exemption even if you didn't have enough property to fully use it. So that's one of the potential advantages of it, but that's going to work even if you use a credit shelter trust, but you didn't have the whole exemption amount to put in the credit shelter trust. So if you remarry, you're now going to be stuck essentially with your last spouse's unused estate tax exemption. That creates a lot of questions. For example, What happens if your surviving spouse did use the exemption and you never got an opportunity to do it? What happens if they don't file an estate tax return, and an estate tax return is required, at least under current law, although that may change, in order to inherit the unused exemption? And third kind of question that arises was, Bob dies, his wife inherits the $5 million exemption. She then makes an enormous gift, let's say, using Bob's exemption and her exemption. She gives $10 million to the kids. By the way, Bob, they'll be very happy if she does that. But then she remarries, and her new husband dies before her, and he has another $5 million exemption, or part of it. Does she get to use part of that? Do you try to recapture what she'd used? Those things are not explicitly addressed. Now, the IRS just came out with a notice about portability on what you have to do to use it. You merely have to sign a gift tax return. You do not have to make a check-the-box election or otherwise. But they are also going to be issuing regulations. And the fact that the service has announced it's going to be issuing regulations for portability suggests to me that they think it's going to be made permanent. But they're probably going to want people to chime in on issues like the ones I just mentioned. However, the IRS might itself be surprised if Congress decides either not to allow it, again, because of needs on the deficit, or if it changes the basic rules. But I was surprised when the Treasury, as part of that announcement last week, said, and oh, by the way, we're going to be issuing regulations.
So, Jonathan, let's just say that Mr. X has died. His wife has a $10 million exemption. 5 years after he dies, at age 75, she meets Mr. Y, and they decide to get married. And, of course, they want a prenuptial agreement drafted. What, if anything, can they do in that prenuptial agreement to assure all the parties that she'll get to keep her DSUA from her first husband?
Well, Bob, I'm not sure there is anything that can be done. Well, at least right now it's not clear. Even if he said, I promise I will use my full exemption, number one, he might not die with enough money to do it. But then again, if he has not enough money that he could use his full exemption, in theory he doesn't have to file an estate tax return, and under current law an estate tax return must be filed. On the other hand, if he's close to the exemption amount, it might be wise to get the statute of limitations going for his executor to file an estate tax return, and that presumably would provide for the inheritance of the unused exemption of her second spouse to die. It also isn't entirely clear, even if you did provide in the prenup, that somehow you can be assured it won't be used, there won't be any inheritance, whether you can still use the one of the first spouse to die. That's something that will have to be clarified in the law.
But in the meantime, matrimonial attorneys that are counseling couples, or one part of the couple that's about to get married, they should really point out this issue, because maybe people will become perpetually engaged. Rather than getting married, if indeed you could lose $5 million worth of exemption.
Well, Bob, that's absolutely true, and you have to consider it, and perhaps something should be said as to whether or not there is any obligation, not just with respect to inheritance of the spouses who are entering into a marriage, and maybe even it's a first marriage, as to whether or not they're going to be waiving rights. But now, perhaps, divorce lawyers or lawyers who do prenuptial agreements should specifically address what happens with respect to it. And that's going to be a horribly complicated matter, and we won't know really which way to approach that until regs have been issued, and then we see whether or not Congress is going to reenact it. Again, this is unlike other legislation where it's in and you worry about taking it away. This is where it's going to be gone at the end of next year, along with a $5 million estate gift and GST exemptions, all of which will fall down to $1 million, although the GST exemption will have been adjusted for inflation and be about $1.4 million or so. But if Congress does nothing, which is certainly a possibility, the portability provisions go away and the $5 million exemptions go away. At least you have an opportunity to voluntarily use your exemptions, but portability, you have to have one of the spouses die within the next 2 years. But the fact that it might be made permanent suggests that, yes, that should probably be addressed in the prenuptial agreement, that in most cases I think it will be that people are not required to provide for the inheritance of the exemption. Although there might be someone who would say, you've got to guarantee me, because you have such little property, that you will, in your will, instruct your executor to file an estate tax return, even if one is not required, so I can inherit the unused exemption. So that's something that might well be addressed, Bob. If you, for example, if your wife died or you got divorced and you were remarrying some sweet young thing and you anticipated she wouldn't have much money and you wanted to be sure that if she predeceased you, you would be able to use her exemption. She's got so little money, she might not be required to file an estate tax return, so you might require it in the prenup. And then you get into questions about, well, what if she doesn't do it? What's the damage? And so on and so forth. But that's an interesting thing, as many areas of human endeavor are. There's always great excitement in death and taxes.
Jonathan, this has been a very insightful podcast today, and thank you so much. On behalf of Lineberger Information Services, I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Especially Jonathan, I hope you'll come back in the future.
Thanks a million, Bob. I'd love to. Goodbye, everyone.